Welcome to, I'm just going to say another episode because I think we tried to figure it out last time. We took that little hiatus. I have no idea how many we did. So let's just go with another episode. Yeah. And we're a day late because we had some scheduling conflicts, which to be honest, I was really happy for because I was so dragging my ass around last night. I was just like, I said to Karen, I'm like, I gotta do the recording with Travers. And she's like, you look tired. And I'm like, I'm really tired. So when you texted me, you're like, any way we can just move it around? I'm like, yep, absolutely. We could do that. So we made it.
Excellent.
A day late, but we're
serendipitous.
Here. Yeah. It worked out well for me. I think I was in bed by like 9 o'clock.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, I'm tired when like, I can't even sit on the couch. Like I was just like, I got to go do something. And I came upstairs to probably try to play some video games or something and was even so tired from that. I was just like, no, screw this. I'm going to bed. So I was in bed by 9. So anyways, here we are, a day late, but we made it, right?
Yep, we're here. And
perfect.
Yeah, that's what matters.
Yeah, that's what matters, right? We were just saying, got to do the reps. So here we are.
Yep.
We actually, as I was creating my little cheat sheet for this, we've got a lot of stuff to get through.
Yeah.
It's been a busy... It's just been a week, I guess, right? Since the last time we chatted. So it's been a busy week with reInvent and, well, all the news. So why don't we get started with reInvent? And I'm going to let you kind of run us through this. If you've got your cheat sheet there or if you want me to direct you, it's up to you. And then I'll give you my one sort of thing that I think is important from reInvent. So fire away.
For sure. Okay. Well, yeah, reInvent just happened and I think it's good to do kind of a recap and review of what were the biggest announcements, maybe the most interesting ones. And these are kind of the top five that caught my eye anyways. So number one for me, I think, in no particular order, right? The database saving plans was huge, right? That's something that's going to get applied across every org that can, essentially, on the system.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. You can't throw any shade at, I have the opportunity to save a few bucks. And if you're committed to running your workloads on AWS, why not save a few bucks? So
yeah,
you know what? I am a little surprised that it took them this long to kind of go from reserved instances for databases to savings plans for databases, because it just seems like it's overdue, right? More flexibility. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, that's really interesting, right? Like, kind of begs the question why. Maybe they were working on it, they didn't see the push for it or the need for it, or maybe it's more of this serverless database, these serverless database options that are coming up. I wonder. Yeah.
You want my cynical take on it?
Sure.
They make
always
too
down
much
for
money.
Cynical take.
Like, let's be honest, right? Like,
yeah,
they make so much money and they're like, hey, if you're going to run your apps, you're going to run your databases. So do we really have to do something? And then maybe now something has happened that we're not aware of. They're like, well, now's the time that we'll change it up. Not that you're going to save a lot of money versus a reserved instance plan. And in all fairness, reserved instance plans have been around and you could have been buying those, right? I think the benefit of this, and tell me if I've missed the mark on this, but my take on the new options is that it covers more databases than what you had in the reserved instance.
Yeah, there's more services covered. That's interesting. So it's kind of like a bone they're throwing to kind of maybe bring some people back in or
everybody's budgets are tight, right? So maybe they're seeing a little more resistance or reluctance than maybe they have in the past. So they're like, throwing a little more money a little discount here or there, maybe. I don't know.
Migrate to AWS will give you this savings plan off of your Azure compute.
Well, we talked last week and I've already had two people ask me about it. As soon as you offer somebody an opportunity to save money on something they couldn't save money on before, you're going to get people saying, why don't we do this? This makes sense for us too.
Plus,
again, cynical take, now you're locking people in on databases that they maybe couldn't
yep.
key in on before. You know, if you commit yep, to a absolutely. Year, that's you're a not huge, going away.
Yeah. That's a huge factor.
Yeah. All right. What's next okay. on your list?
Next thing. So the vector databases on Amazon S3, generally available, 40 times the scale of in preview. I mean, this is just cheap storage for your vector stores. So that's, again, in demand right now, and it's going to continue to be in demand as long as we're in this AI world, right? So
yeah, which depending on the news articles you read, may or may not be nearing its end, mm-hmm. which we'll talk about yes. later on. Yeah, you know what I found interesting about this? I don't know a lot about vector tables. I haven't looked at it, mm-hmm. but when you think about S3 in general, right? You had mm-hmm. buckets. And now you have, do they call them directory buckets? And now you have table buckets. Now you have vector yep. buckets. Now you have, what, 50 terabytes maximum size instead of 5? Like,
yep.
yeah. I guess if you're thinking about it that way, and I know not all of that was announced at reInvent, but for a service that, in my opinion, is foundational for a lot of things, right? It's highly durable, cheap storage. You can use it in all sorts of different ways. And I think even for myself, mm-hmm. I just kind of take it for granted. I was just saying, yeah, S3, whatever, yeah. dump some stuff in it and be on our merry way, right? But now you've got all these kind of purpose-built options built on top of S3.
Right? Yeah. Everything's files, right? I mean, there's a reason they started with it, right? It's just the most convenient option. In yep. a lot of cases for storing yep. files in the yep. cloud.
Yep. And I've deployed my first S3 tables.
Oh,
yeah. Just that's recently. Exciting. Yeah. For a customer, they're like, have you ever used this? And I was like, no. Right. And they're like, could you help us with it anyways? And I was like, sure, let's do it. And it actually worked out really cool. It took a little bit of head scratching at the beginning. I think like mm-hmm. all services, I was kind of like, oh, what did I get myself into? And then after a little bit of, poking at it and trying to figure some things out, more along like the technology itself, like to set it up, to provision it, it's pretty, okay. I don't want to say easy, but it's straightforward. You read the documentation, yeah. you poke at it a couple times, you figure it out. But what the challenging part was trying to help the developers figure out how to connect to the thing, right?
Right.
Because the connectivity is the same, but different. So kind of working mm-hmm. with them to try to figure out how the heck, now that it's here, how do we use it and how do we add data to it and how do we query it was harder. So it's kind of neat though. Kind of neat.
How do you access and model the data in this system? Kind of like when they were really pushing single table Dynamo for a while, right?
Mm. Aren't they pushing that anymore?
They're still pushing it, I think. But
yeah. I don't know. I think that's the PC versus Mac debate. We could have probably a yeah. whole episode on multi-table versus single-table design and probably have a few people that are a little angry about what you say. All right,
definitely.
Perfect. Yeah, what's next on your list?
Okay, the next one, and this one I thought was quite interesting in that it mirrors another service and almost replaces it. It's the durable functions for Lambda. For multi-step applications, and people who've been developing with serverless in the serverless space for a while will, I'm sure, be familiar with step functions. A service, right? Mm. So this kind of obviates that in a lot of use cases, right? Or it replaces it in a lot of context, simplifies it. So I think maybe if you're working with a lot of step functions, it's worth taking a look at in terms of just these long-term applications you have running that you need to check many things over time, right?
Yeah. Again, in just full disclosure, I saw this and my take was, well, we already have step functions. What do I need to do?
Yeah.
And I was just teaching a class today and we were talking about step functions and mm-hmm. we didn't talk about this because it's so new, but I'm kind of thinking to myself, I don't understand, why do I need this? So do you know a little bit more? Can you tell me why I would care about durable Lambda functions versus if I'm already using step functions, why would I care? Put you
yeah,
on the spot.
Yeah, I think for sure. I mean, in my view, this is step functions light, right?
Okay.
So in step functions, you have all of that state management, all those steps you have to go through. There's the whole state language that you have to configure in your templates or in the console through that GUI, right? So this is probably a step away from that to simplify the workflow. And I think that's all this is. And if you need something that's doing that kind of long-running state-based workflow, then having a simpler system to set that up in is always, it just makes things easier.
Okay. Yeah, makes sense. I would suspect I will have a couple questions about it at some point. It's been quiet right now, but I also think people are dealing with the fallout of reInvent, just meaning like what the heck is all this stuff? And we're also kind of getting into the time of year that people are probably thinking of stuff other than work.
Oh, definitely.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? You got lots of plans, places to go, things to do. Do I want to care about the latest AWS news? Maybe not. I don't know. Yeah. All right. What's next on your list?
This thing is interesting. It's going to come up in another news article we're going to go over later, but it's the preview of the AWS General MCP server. So they're combining several of their MCP servers that they've already released into one package. That's just better for this for MCP applications, right?
Yeah.
If they can condense it down, then that's going to make it easier for agents to access the tool. So that's going to make that flow better.
Yeah, this was on my list too. Like I remember I saw this on the news feed and I poked around on it a bit. And, you know, I've shared my MCP configuration a couple times. I made a few changes this week, figured out a couple things, which maybe we'll talk about when we get into the AI portion.
Okay.
The thing, and I might be confused because there are so many AWS MCP servers, right? The challenge that I still have is, well, you know, you and I work together, so you know what my life's like as far as how many different accounts I'm connecting to. And I like the basic ones where I don't have to provide credentials because that's really hard. At least in my brain, I haven't been able to figure that out yet.
It happened again. What?
Okay. Hang on. Before we go back, I'm going to get rid of Twitch, I think. I don't understand what's going on with my network connection lately. I think we're live again. I'm just going to leave it. Yeah, I'll just leave it and see what happens. The bitrate, the little bitrate viewer in Twitch is just, it's not happy. So weird. I don't know. I played Battlefield last night with no problems. Yeah. It's just this. So I was saying that, you know, going between so many different accounts, like how do you manage all those credentials? I'm using SSO. I haven't wrapped my head around how to do that. So that's what I liked about, and I might be messing the names up, but the current AWS Knowledge MCP, I think it's called. There's a core MCP. Like they help me answer just basic questions. Like, hey, I have a question about service X. Use the official documentation and tell me if this is right or not. Or give me a reference. And I thought when I looked at the new, what is it called? The AWS MCP server. Like it's trying to like, I understand the value of bundling something together, but I also wonder, like, what if I don't want it to do all that stuff? Like, I don't need it to try to deploy infrastructure for me. I don't need it to autocomplete CLI commands for me. Like, because all of those things, unless, again, I'm misunderstanding it, is that then I have to configure credentials. And I don't want to have to worry about that. So I'm kind of on the fence. I think I might just kind of sit in the sidelines a little bit. I'm happy with my MCP workflow right now and maybe just see what comes up or maybe there's just something I can figure out on how to manage all these credentials.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. If you just want access to the documentation, then that's a specific use case. And you know what is interesting about these MCP servers is that they get less efficient the more stuff you cram in there. It's kind of interesting how the performance degrades with volume. Like models aren't super great at making a bunch of different tool calls, like when the list of tools gets really long, so you run into some quality issues. So if you have a really tightly scoped documentation MCP server, that might be better.
It serves the purpose that I need right now, and that's like I need to confirm some info. Like, am I losing my mind or is this close? And don't just tell me, use the official documentation and provide me a reference. Because I think we talked about this last week, right? Trust but verify. Yeah. Like, you can tell me anything. Is that true? I don't know. So
yeah,
it works for me, but it'll be interesting to see where this goes, right?
They'll probably bundle it up with the various agents they released over reInvent as well, like the DevOps and the security one. Like,
yeah, bundle it all together.
Use your hook into AWS, the APIs are.
Yeah, I think you're on the right path. All right, what's your next one?
So the last one I thought was really interesting is that code commit is coming back. So this one is, so last year, you may remember, they announced that they were sunsetting a bunch of services, code commit and some others.
Hey, sorry to cut you off. Just one sec. Your audio is awfully light on my side. Try it again.
Is it? Hello?
That's a little better. Yeah, that's a little better. I'm going to turn it up a bit. Could be me.
Is this better?
Yeah, that's better. There we go. Sorry. I just wanted to make sure that I could hear you properly. Go gotcha. Ahead. I cut you off. Fire away.
No worries. So if you may remember, this was a year, maybe a year and a half ago, they released they announced that they were going to be sunsetting a few services. Amongst them was Code Commit, which is essentially a source repository, source control app for your code, right? Like a GitHub or a Bitbucket kind of service. And it's really interesting that this is coming back now because of the, I don't know if you've seen this, the issues that have been happening with GitHub lately.
Yeah, was just chatting about it the other day, today, and they're like, we have an internal Slack channel for external service outages, like for vendors that they use. And the guy's like, it's just filled with GitHub. It's just all GitHub. Yeah. So I haven't really read about it. It was just sort of said briefly in a channel. And now you're mentioning it. What's going on? Is it just like reliability?
Well, it's kind
what's
of
happening?
Yeah, there's a huge problem with their CI system right now. So they're running into issues. Some big projects have moved off of it, like Zig, for example. I don't know if you're familiar, but it's a programming, low-level programming language.
Yeah.
But essentially what was happening is they have this code in their CI runner, CI execution system that is just, it's really inspiring how poorly it's written. It is like echoing all into a file thousands upon thousands of times in order to establish like a wait time, like to do a sleep, for example. So essentially what they've had happen is they've had these zombie runners running for years for some customers. Racking up hours. But anyways, I there's still discourse about it. It's probably caused by, you know, the Microsoft kind of aura sweep while you're saying it.
Yeah.
It's just a great.
Yeah. I do see some of that in the channel too, right? It sucks now because it's Microsoft. So that's always going to happen.
Yeah. Whenever a big corporation buys a service like that, you tend to see some degradation. Yeah. But it's interesting that they're bringing it back now in light of all this. So I guess people are asking for a independent code storage repository that they can use. And if you have all your stuff on AWS anyways, why not put your AWS, I guess.
So what they're doing is they're taking advantage of shitty service for somebody else. And my cynical take again is they can make money. So they're like, all we did was turn off new users. Why don't we just turn it back on? It's sitting there anyway. So if I can get a few extra bucks for me, I'll take it.
Yeah.
And I'm cranky today.
The cynic is out.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Well,
yeah.
My takeaway from reInvent, I told you I had one thing. I think I have two. And I don't really have to say a whole lot about these, but we talked about the frontier models. I have had zero opportunity to actually try out there's three of them, right? There's the Kiro, there's DevOps, and there's security, right?
Security.
Yeah, I've got it. I've scrawled on my little to-do list and never done anything about it. But I think for me, that's the big takeaway. And then sort of on a non-technical side, I guess, Werner, right? Like, by the sounds of it, that's it. And it'll be interesting to see. I was talking to somebody and they're like, if it is true, because it really hasn't been confirmed at this point, at least from anywhere that I've, like a reputable source that was his last reInvent, right? if it is true, my comment to that person was, oh man, whoever steps into that has shoes to fill. Like
huge shoes.
Huge yeah. shoes. I don't know how many reinvents I've been to. It's more than one. And like for me, it's the highlight. And the end of his keynote this year when he Warner out and he dropped the mic and then they started doing the stills from all of his other reinvents. I got to tell you, man, that got me in the feels a little bit for, you know, the technology conference. I was like, oh, shucks, this sucks. Right. So anyways, those are my two takeaways from reInvent. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Who knows? Right.
Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Let's change gears. And we've got a whole whack load of what I'll say contradictory, which is not surprising, sort of Gen AI related stuff. And let's start with, I think the big one is just today, I guess a couple hours maybe before you and I started this, was GPT-5.2. So really
just all, time.
Yeah. All I can say about this is it's new and it's better than the one that they had before.
Yep.
Okay.
I read the benchmarks on their product page, and the numbers sure are higher than they were.
Yeah, the one that really caught me was the SWE Pro or something like that. Like, how did they? And I have no idea. Like, so I'm just making shit up, right? But how do you go from a 30? And I have no idea what that actually means. Okay, but if it went like 30 to 35, it'd be like, oh, incremental improvement, great. But it went from like 30 to 80. And that's like basically software engineering capabilities or something, isn't it?
Something like that. Yeah, I'm not too sure what the Sweetbench specifically tests. Yeah. But yeah, they must have done some intense reinforcement learning training on more on the ground kind of tasks that you might run into.
Right.
Like script generation.
So like, does this mean the OpenAI web browser is probably dead? Like they've decided not to be the equivalent of Google, and we're going to do everything for all the people, and we better just make sure this model's good.
I bet that got sidelined the moment they had that code red announcement.
Yeah.
Did you hear about the memo that went up?
Yeah. I think
maybe we'll see that come back.
Yeah. But. I did fire up my ChatGPT, and it said you have a new release or whatever. So I was like, click. And it came back up and it was still 5.1. I was like, oh, well, I'll go do something else. I'm on 5.2 now. Maybe tomorrow, right? Come on. If it's that good, it needs to help me move faster. So I'll keep it. I think I said to you I was considering getting rid of it. Not that it's a bad model or anything, but I'm just like, I'm not using it a whole lot. So why don't I spend some money somewhere else, right? And I still have not figured out how to pay for Google. I may be paying for it already. I don't even know. But regardless, I still do not have access to Gemini 3. So,
gotcha.
Whether I'm paying for it or not, I'm getting stuck on 2.5.
Well, they bundled it into your Google account now, I think. So yeah, you have to go and actually.
But that's perfect.
Pro level or something.
Like, yeah, I think I have Pro, and then I logged into the account. They're like, you should upgrade to Pro Ultra, and I'm like, I don't even know like what I could do with Pro. Why would I upgrade to Ultra for like $200 a month or something crazy, right? So. I don't know. Do you have any other things to say about 5.2? Like, I don't know, since it just came out.
There's very little else to say, I think. I mean, some of the numbers are higher, a lot higher. So that's good.
That's good.
I like the Sweetbench doubling is interesting. The AG, okay. So the Arc AGI numbers are kind of interesting. I don't know if you're familiar with the Arc AGI competition or not.
No.
But essentially, it is a suite of problems specifically designed to be difficult for LLMs or AI tools to crack or solve. So ArcAGI 1 is kind of solved at this point. ArcAGI 2 is a lot more interesting. It's a lot of spatial graphical racing puzzles.
You're putting blocks around,
like rotating images and that kind of thing. So it isn't very interesting to see that GPT-2 Pro is, again, it's a tripling on this one. It was at 17% and now it's at 54%. So that's kind of crazy.
Do you think they were just holding this back and then they've got the shit scared out of them with maybe you know, my take is that Google scared the shit out of a lot of people. And that's just, you know, I don't have any real data to back that up, but just the way I was reading some articles and stuff, it kind of felt like that. So I'm wondering if they had this in their back pocket and were like, oh, we'll wait to Q1, no big deal. And then this drops and they're like, oh shit. And they're like, you know, to have that kind of big jump and just kind of sort of release it on a Thursday afternoon. And I don't know about you, but I didn't see it anywhere. It was shared.
I was shocked
in Discord, and I was like, what is this? Really? And I clicked it. I'm like, oh, I guess we got to talk about that. Right. So weird.
I think that's a totally reasonable take. I think that probably they were sandbagging this, or they were putting the finishing touches on it for a while, and they were hoping that maybe one of their other endeavors would pan out, like the browser. And then Google came out with Gemini 3 Pro and kind of upended the whole ecosystem, right?
Yep.
And then just lit a fire under them, I guess.
Yeah. Made their choices for them. Yeah.
Kind of forced it.
Yeah, kind of forced their hand. Yes. Yeah. All right. So then let's talk about the next article, Disney OpenAI Sora deal.
Right.
I have some thoughts on this, but I'll let you start first. What do you think?
So this kind of feels like Disney is saying you've already trained on the images. We may as well use this as part of our workflow. So I bet you what you're going to see pretty soon, and this will probably show up at like all the Disney parks, right? It's like interactive stations or rides that your kids can talk to, or if you're a Disney adult that you can talk with, like, what's her name? Elsa from Frozen, for example.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
That kind of thing. That's probably what I expect to see the soonest.
Yeah. I won't be surprised. I kind of had a couple takes on this. First off, it seems like a complete reversal from like 6 months ago, where like essentially we'll fight this to the death. And I'm not saying that's what Disney was saying. I'm just saying the industry in general, right? Like, you cannot do this. We will go to the mat on this, right? And we will fight forever. And now they're like, oh, well, yeah. So, you know, the other comment that I thought is resistance futile? Like, Disney's kind of like, I don't know, what are we going to do, right? The people are going to do it whether we like it or not. So let's make it official.
Well, the thing is, anything you generate with these models can't be copyrighted, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So that's the way it works, at least in the US, right?
Yeah.
As of now. So I guess maybe what's the harm? Yeah, I guess is what they're thinking. Maybe they want to get ahead of it and put some strings on the cash, you know, like you can't generate our characters like X or Y because of this investment.
Yeah. And that's a nice little segue into my next little thought on this. So short form video. Okay. TikTok, what is it? YouTube Shorts, all those things. Like, it seems to be just gobbling everything up, right? So it did say in that article something about Disney will make some of the content available on Disney Plus. So here you go. This is my thought. It's the old saying, content is king, still is true, right? Otherwise, Netflix wouldn't buy Warner Brothers, Paramount. Whether they do or not still, but it sounds like it's going to get nasty. But, you know, that's all about content, right? I want the best content on my platform because I have to keep your eyes on this platform. Otherwise, you're not going to spend money here. You're going to go somewhere else. So Disney, in my opinion, Disney already has some great content. Like, we watch a lot of movies and stuff on Disney. They've got good stuff. Okay. Yeah. But what about short form content? So here's what I'm thinking. You license this, okay, and you say, we're going to make some of this content available on Disney Plus. And now when I log in Disney Plus, I get my regular stuff, and then I got that line of shorts. All Disney-related content, right? And same thing, if you're a Disney kid or a Disney adult, and you're just like, oh my God, I could watch 10-second videos or 30-second videos on my favorite characters all friggin' day long, right? And then you then, as Disney, you say, Travers, you're like one of the best content creators we have. We'll slice you some cash. It's just a content mill, as far as I think. Like, just, we need constant new material, and it's all on brand. And I can just plunk it into our streaming platform, and the people that love Disney will watch Disney all day, every day.
I know who this is for.
Who?
This is for iPad babies.
Yeah. Yeah. You just sit there.
This is for your toddler who you are propping up on with them on YouTube. You don't want them watching anything that's like not PC or weird generated videos that are already on there.
Yeah.
You put them on Disney Plus and you have them churn through the created automated Tangled queue. Right.
Constantly.
Cinderella, Lion King. Yep.
We'll see. This could go bad very quickly. But
for sure.
Yeah. And you also have to think, like, you know, our later discussions here, which we should move on to, but like OpenAI needs cash.
Yep.
So here's $1 billion that they'll probably loan back to them in some sort of weird simple agreement or something. But anyways, that's for another day. Could very well happen. All right. So the next thing is probably my highlight. I'm a big fan of Cory Doctorow. And I think it's off of his feed, right? It's off of his website.
Yes.
And it's the transcript of a talk he did. And I actually, you know, sometimes the algorithms are scary in how good they are. Like I was like, not doom scrolling, but flipping through YouTube looking for content. And I'm like, oh, Cory Doctorow, click. And then I'm like, oh, podcast about Cory Doctorow, click. And then I found this, right? And I don't know, man. This like, his take on this. First, if you don't know who Cory Doctorow is, right? So really fantastic sci-fi writer. I got a bunch of books. I actually have one sitting right here that I'm throwing my phone off of right now. There. Makers. This is a fantastic book. And I like to read at night in the dark. So I like this book so much that... well, my eyes aren't like they used to be, so it's quite small and it's very hard to read it in the dark. So I actually put it on my Kindle and I'm reading it again right now. So good.
Nice.
Great sci-fi writer. So essentially his take here is that, and jump in anytime. Essentially what we have here is large companies, monopoly style companies that they get to a certain point where the only way that they can continue to make enough money, maintain those monopolistic sort of controls of the market is just grow at all costs, right? Yeah. And my take on that article is that growth at all costs is essentially trying to sell all of us on the fact that we need AI to do our jobs or you're going to be out of a job. So that's my first thought.
Right.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think it was such a great crystallization of the idea of or a description of the perverse incentives kind of in the space, right? Like you have this idea of these growth companies, like these startups that need to essentially inflate in a bubble to grow and capture users and get more valuable. But then as you start plateauing in your growth, you can't attract as many new hires, talent, make investments in companies, that kind of thing. So in order to grow, they need to convince you. And it kind of goes into the fact that what they're trying to sell you or sell the world on is the fact that this system can do anyone's job, right? And what kind of impact that has on society. I think that was a really good recap.
Yeah. You know, but before I mention a couple more things about it, the other thing, just because we were talking about short form content, it's a long article. I'm guilty of this too, right? Like I know that my attention span is not what it used to be, right? And I was trying to get through this article and I'm like, I could just feel myself going, and I'm like, you got to finish this. This is good, right? So struggle isn't the right word, but I had to force myself to read it, which is actually a really interesting take on the whole thing because we're just so used to all of these little short bits of stuff that you're like, okay, I can just move on now. I don't have to give much thought. This article, like I'll put it in the show notes and everything. It's so good. And then the other thing is I'm going to mess up the reverse centaur thing. But my take on it was essentially, and I think this goes again to kind of what you were saying about just the screwed up nature of all this stuff. And the example I think he gave was something along like hospitals, radiology, stuff like that.
Radiologists.
And,
yeah.
And so this, the AI salesperson shows up and says, you're spending, all this, these millions of dollars for your radiology department when AI can do it better and you can fire all those people. And this will do it for you. And instead of having 20 people, now you have like 4 people. And then the, and then basically the deal is written so that the company saves a bunch of money, but then some of that money goes back to the AI company because, hey, we saved a bunch of money. And then when something does go wrong, it's not the AI's fault. It's the human's fault because they're supposed to be checking all of this stuff and there's only 4 of them now. So good luck that they're going to be able to see everything. I don't know, man. It that was a tough article to read. Like, he has a much different take on this than I think the vast majority of people that you see talking about this.
Totally. And it kind of like, it kind of brings things into perspective. And I like the idea of like a reverse of a centaur, reverse centaur, right? It's a sci-fi term. The centaur is a human head on a mechanical body, essentially.
Yeah.
Where the experience, you're still a human, you get, but you get all the benefits of having augmented potential, right? The reverse centaur is a system where you're a machine head on a flesh body, right? So that's like a system where a human, the human is part of the machine, reusable, disposable. Like, and he goes into an example of like an Amazon delivery truck, right? Like,
yes.
With cameras that track your every move and can't actually, you're so tied to these metrics that you don't have time to rest. You just have to keep pushing all day. And that's a reverse centaur. And that's the kind of trap that you can get stuck in these systems, right? And we don't want to build those, ideally. You'd rather not build the torment nexus, right? You remember them, but
yeah.
He has such a really good way, good metaphor for that.
Yeah. And he did a whole interview. We'll move on to the next thing, but he did a whole interview. I think it's called the Prospect Podcast, and it's broken into 2 parts. So I after I read this article, I found that maybe I didn't find it. Maybe it's the algorithm knowing that I read this article, and then it's like, hey, you should watch this. And I watched the first part. I haven't got to the second part. So he talks about that article in more detail, or not the article, but his talk. So I thought that was pretty good. That's a fantastic piece of journalism, I guess you could call it, right? What's next? Oh, MCP model, or not MCP model, but the model context protocol being donated by Anthropic to the Agentic AI Foundation.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So my question is, I guess at this point, is MCP now considered the standard? Like, is this just the fight's over for how you're going to connect all these things together? It's MCP or bust.
It looks like, for better or for worse, that's probably going to be the standard. I know there are some issues with MCP, right? Like, in terms of agents being able to use it with longer lists of tools, that kind of thing. But, you know, if we could have started the web with a baked in set of standards a lot earlier, then who knows where we'd be. So
yeah,
I think there's definitely some value in getting a standard wanged out as soon as possible.
Yeah. And didn't OpenAI sort of do something very similar with is it called AgentsMD too? Didn't they sort of come up with that standard and sort of donate it as well and say, hey, you go manage this? Isn't just another example of how these folks are all just competing with each other to kind of, you know, stay in the news, maybe? We're talking about it, so.
We are, yeah. I mean, it's coming up here. I mean, it totally is that. And if all of those disparate systems can get merged into something that's de facto, like an industry standard, then all the better, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I guess, you know, time will tell.
Yeah.
Somebody's probably already working on something other than MCP right now. They just haven't told anybody about it. So it's around the corner, especially the way things are changing so fast, right? Who knows?
Who knows if it'll even be relevant in like a year or a year and a half, 2 years, who knows, right?
Yeah. Maybe we'll all just be using frontier models on like a hyperscaler somewhere, and you just connect to those and it has all the horsepower you need, and you just pay by the minute that you're using it or something. Who knows?
Could be.
Yeah. All right. Perfect. All right. So let's come back to some reality with less positive news. Although I guess the Doctorow article wasn't really positive news, but the first one was something I found on The Atlantic about OpenAI losing the AI wars, which was, you know, maybe backs up what we just said, because like this week, everything I read was like OpenAI is toast. These guys are done. These guys, and I know it's obviously a lot of clickbait in there, right? And you know, you get riled up about it, but I think there is not some truth in the fact, in the sense that, you know, OpenAI is done. I don't think that's possible, but I think that first mover advantage with it is long, long gone. So this was like talking about maybe how being first out of the gate was fantastic, but now that everyone is caught up and maybe surpassing them, so they're feeling a little panicky maybe. I don't know. What do you think?
I think they're feeling the squeeze. I mean, like we said earlier, the Gemini 3.0 Pro release really put it into, I mean, it was just the best model, right, when it released. So that's a huge piece of pressure. Another interesting thing, and we kind of touched on this a little bit last week, but the advent of all of the open weight Chinese models that are flooding the market, right? This is another piece of huge pressure. Because these models are extremely, or not extremely cheap, but they're much cheaper to run for comparable quality for the most part. Like it's the frontier models are obviously the best in the game right now. Like Claude 4.5 Opus, Gemini 3 Pro, they may be 5.0 or GPT 5.2 now are still top of the line, but you can get pretty good results out of like the ZLM 4.6 or the Kimi K2 thinking models, right? And you can host, if you wanted to, I mean, these are really big. You couldn't realistically host them yourself as like an individual.
Especially with the price of RAM and everything right now.
Yeah.
And storage.
Like, you can realistically do that, but you have these companies like Cerebras and Grok with a Q who are hosting these models on dedicated hardware that they designed, and they're getting like 1,000 tokens per second through their systems, right?
Yeah.
So you can get a lot more volume through for a much better experience. Yeah. It's pretty close, like pretty close results.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned Cerebus, however you say that. I'm going to find, I listened to a podcast that I won't be able to remember right now. I have to open Spotify to remember, but they talked to the guys, the team behind those chips, and like the size of the chips, like they're massive, yeah. Right? Compared to like standard chips and stuff. And they did that for all sorts of reasons to be able to do a lot more processing and stuff like that. I'll find it and I'll share it with you, and I'll put it in the show notes, because it was interesting. I think it's probably pretty old now, like that podcast. It's not like it was last week, but you mentioned that name and I was like, oh, I remember those guys talking to the hardware folks that were designing it and building these chips. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, OpenAI had the chance to buy them a few years ago.
Yeah.
But they got too big.
Too big. Yeah.
Or they passed on, and they locked in with NVIDIA. So.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're seeing here is, like we said already, maybe just a little bit of a jump scare maybe for OpenAI. Right. And they're like, hey, maybe we shouldn't be a consumer company. I know they're still a consumer company, but like, maybe we don't need a web browser and a chat solution, you know, where you can group chat and help you with your shopping. Maybe those are all good as is. And we'll just get back to making this model better.
Be the best chat. Well, you know what OpenAI has is they have the biggest chat app, right?
Yeah.
Like everyone knows OpenAI, they know ChatGPT.
Yeah.
So. Focus on that, they'll probably be okay.
Yeah, probably.
They have a lot of inertia there. But yeah. In terms of model, I mean, it's never been a better time to be building something using an LLM or some sort of generative model. Your choice.
Yeah, that's it. And there was another article about I'm reading the slug in the URL. OpenAI's house of cards seem to be primed to collapse. Like, come on, this is fantastic stuff, right? Like, this is like soap opera type material, right? You're like, ooh, what am I gonna read? So then you go read it, and it's basically the same article that the Atlantic wrote, right? Just the fact that, okay, so these guys were first movers. They had, like, you know, the darling for a while, and all of these other really large companies that already had huge amounts of infrastructure have decided that, yeah, it's time for them to actually put up or shut up. And again, you know, we keep saying like Gemini 3 and those kinds of things. And, you know, the comment there was just like, you know, you may have been ahead and you caught sort of the incumbents in a position where they're like, ah, whatever. And then they all were like, oh shit. And they have big ships that they finally got steered in the right direction. And I think you're kind of seeing the outcomes of that now, right? Yeah, they're waking up. And this is actually in the article, they talked about the prices of RAM. And it's funny because we were literally just talking about this Tuesday night. We're playing Battlefield and somebody's computer is not very happy. And they were like, I think I should upgrade and, you know, get some more RAM and stuff. So we started looking on Amazon. And I think you and I talked. I built a new gaming computer at the beginning of this year. So we were talking about how expensive RAM was. Yeah, I could see the future. I knew exactly
what to buy RAM.
It's kind of like when you buy a Lego set and you bought like the most popular Lego set without realizing that you did. I'm like, huh, I wonder if I pulled the RAM out of my gaming PC and just put up with not gaming for a while, I could make some cash on my RAM right now and my GPU. But I looked up what I paid for 64 gig of RAM in February of this year. You want to take a guess at what I paid for 64 gig of RAM?
$120?
I wish it was that good, but you're not, $220, I think it was, for 64 gig. I looked that up on Amazon, the same thing. It's $850 now.
Oh my God.
Yeah. $850. I got it for $220 or something like that, right? It's $800. And I meant to do the same for the storage. So I ended up with, I have an SSD in it and I've got an NVMe in there as well.
Yeah.
And I meant to look up while we were talking the price, because they keep talking about storage going up too, right? And then probably was getting my ass handed to me in Battlefield and was angry. So I was like, oh, I'm losing because I'm not concentrating, even though it's just because I suck. So I had to refocus. So I didn't look it up, but maybe I will. But I nearly fell off my chair when I saw how, like, that's four times the price.
Quadrupled in like a month, not even.
Yeah, like insane, right? Like, just nuts. So that's Engadget. It's kind of like the exact same article as The Atlantic. And then finally here to wrap up, I somehow got on this newsletter, What's Hot in IT or something like that. I don't even know when I signed up for it, right? But for some reason, again, I keep talking about the algorithms. It popped into my important email for some reason in Gmail. And I'm like, all right. So I clicked it. Yeah. And I thought there's a couple things in here that tie in nicely with what we've talked about tonight. First, I have no idea who this person is. Okay. Name's Brett Taylor. And there was like a little screenshot or maybe a comment that the person made from the newsletter. And Brett Taylor uses this term constellation of models, where I think it goes back to what you mentioned earlier, right? Where you're just going to see people using all sorts of different models in whatever it is they're building. And it kind of, you know, to tie it back to how we started when we were talking about Amazon, it reminded me of a term, and I don't know if Amazon still really uses this term too much anymore, but the right tool for the right job, right? And I remember when I first started in AWS, you always heard that, use the right tool for the job. Use, you know, we've got all these things that you can use, pick the one that makes the most sense. And I kind of took that from this constellation of models, because the comment, and I'm not sure if it was attributed to this Brett Taylor guy or was just a comment that was made in the article, but there was somewhere else that said like, the people or the teams that are being successful are the teams who are not necessarily using the best model, but they're mixing models together in production to essentially, get what they need into market fast and it being good. And I'm going to mess these up, but the example they had was somebody using DeepSeek, OpenAI, and Anthropic, and Quen. Yeah. Like mixing all of those together in some sort of solution that they had come up with. And yeah, I think it just ties nicely into what we've chatted about tonight. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, quintessence, it's the Alibaba model, right?
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, like,
okay.
But GPT-5 is essentially a bunch of a disparate group of models in a trench coat, right? Like they just piled a bunch of expert models together and have a router in between. And that's how that service works ostensibly, right?
Yeah.
So that makes sense. And I would almost argue use the right tool for the right job for the right price, right? Like you have options that you can use and different capability levels across these price ranges. And again, you can afford to use like some of these larger, more costly thinking models for more important tasks that you need to, you know, maybe plan out better, give a better, more detailed response. So for something quick and snappy in real time, you might want something like, I know the models just came out, but there's also those cheaper Chinese models, right?
Yeah.
If you can get, like, there's throughput considerations, guardrail considerations. Yeah.
It's just something else. And that I'll say one more thing, and it ties back to the Doctorow article. Like, my take is he believes that this is really a house of cards, and at some point, everything's going to go to shit. Right. Like that's kind of, well, you know, he termed, or he came up with the shitification term. And I think he's sort of saying that's the same stuff that's happening right now with AI and eventually it will go to shit. And I think he says somewhere, it's either in the article or in that podcast where he's like, yeah, we will be left with some decent stuff after everything goes to hell. Right. And maybe that some decent stuff is some of the open source models, maybe not open source, but like open model. What do they call it? Open weights. Thank you. Yeah, I kept getting stuck on open source, but open weight type models that you have the ability to kind of tweak and play around with a little bit more than some of the models that are around right now. Maybe those are left over and people retool them. It reminds me again, his comments really do remind me about the Maker's book. If you haven't read that, you should read it. It's basically everything's gone to shit, but there are some people that are trying to make the best of the shit that's left over, and they come up with some really cool ideas, but then just everything goes shitty again, right? There's my highly thought out analysis of the Maker's book. Fun times, right? Fun times.
Very fun times. Interesting times.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Do you, so do you have a movie recommendation this week?
I do.
Yeah.
Have a movie recommendation. What did we watch last week? Have you heard the story of the roof man?
The what?
The roof man. There was a crime spree that happened in the mid-2000s, I think it was. Where this guy essentially robbed McDonald's by breaking into the roof, like sawing a hole through the roof and then dropping into the store, locking the staff in the deep freeze and taking the money. Right. Yeah. And he was always very, very nice and cordial to the people. Robbed them very kindly.
Oh, nice. That's nice of him.
But eventually they caught him. But he escaped from prison and then spent some time living in a Toys R Us and then had a whole second life outside of full. Prison.
Yeah, and when I was a kid, you know how much I would have loved to get locked in a Toys R Us overnight? Like that would have been the ultimate kid story. You're like, oops, got locked in the Toys R Us. I'll make do until the morning. Like, wow. So he lived in a Toys R Us.
Yeah. You started a whole second family essentially. It's a good story. It's just called Roof.
What's it on?
It's Channing Tatum.
Did you get it on a streaming platform or? Maybe I
should
ask you that.
I got it as an ISO, you know.
Okay. I'll look. It's got to be on Disney, right? They're gathering up all the content. Yeah, sure.
Maybe I'll try that.
Prime's actually quite. Yeah, you know what? I keep going back to the algorithm thing. Prime has me figured out. Like it knows that I binge watch shitty movies Saturday and Sunday mornings, and I swear I come downstairs, I make a coffee, I feed the cats, I'm like, oh, Prime. I turn on Prime and it's I'm almost guaranteed within a couple clicks that I'm gonna see some like shitty B horror from the 70s, and I'll be like,
Awesome.
I'll watch that. I don't actually have a movie recommendation that I'm willing to admit that I watched this week, because we're in, well, I'm in Hallmark Christmas. I can't help myself, man. I can't help myself.
It's that time of year. Have you seen Hot Frost?
Yes. It's fucking awesome.
Awesome.
Come on. That's fantastic. I was going to turn one on tonight, and I got a little side eye when I was like, right? And I was like, oh, okay, we watch that. And it's, I can't even remember what it's called. It's on Netflix, and it's basically a woman who fakes that she's a Santa Claus in like a fancy resort to be close to her daughter over the holiday season. So isn't that that the same story, Robin Williams, Mrs. Doubtfire?
I guess so. Yeah.
Just in reverse. And now it's a Christmas theme. So it's on my watch list. So I may have a really shitty Christmas movie to recommend on next week. But that's awesome. I might have to watch that myself extremely early in the morning before the house starts coming to life. I can sit on the couch and watch my shitty Christmas movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, man. Well, let's call it a night. As always, it's been fun. Lots of news. I wonder if it'll slow down this week, or maybe like Anthropic will be, oh, by the way, look at our new model. It's
9.0.
It's like Sonnet 4.5.1A, version 2. And it's just slightly better, right?
Light.
Yeah. Light. Yeah. And it's just like, what if the other one's 87, this is 87.3. Suckers.
Same price.
Same price. Look, eyes over here, man. All right, man. I'll let you go. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll catch up with some new news next week.
Sounds good.
Okay. Bye for now.